How's it going, everyone? This is Pat Loika. You're listening to Loika Mania, episode 10. Today I have a guest. He is a writer. Actually, he is a staff writer for Newsarama.com, probably the premier comics news site on the internet. His name is Albert Ching. Welcome, Albert.
Hey, Pat. How are you?
I am doing good, sir. Thanks for taking the time to be here today. I've told you why I have you here, and we will get into that in a little bit. For the time being, though, let's talk a little bit about some stuff we've read this week. I mean, what did you pick up this week?
Oh, man, it was a huge week. I ended up, I think, with like 12 books that, you know, just some stuff that came out today, this Wednesday. And but so far, I've only read Avengers and Thunderbolts.
Well, I guess this. I read both books, too.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a while. You read Thunderbolts, and we'll start with that first. I really like this new direction that they started with this issue, with the last issue, and I like the fact that they tried to pull another one of their classic. I mean, if you read Thunderbolts from the beginning, you know that this series kind of thrives on, like, you know, they like to swerve you. You know, they like to shake up the status quo like every so often. And last issue's ending was like, you know, another one of those kind of moments. And then when you got to read this issue, well, you know, you realized it was all a ruse.
Yes, and, you know, I thought, I mean, obviously, you know, given, I guess, currently unfolding events in other titles, I mean, I know you don't want to spoil things, so
yeah.
I'll try to keep it vague.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I was definitely thinking it might be a ruse, but I mean, I wasn't convinced of it. I honestly thought it could have gone the other way, which I thought would have been cool, too, which is why I definitely, that was, you know, that's reasons why it was one of the first things I read this week.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, last issue is fair game as far as spoilers go. So, I mean, seeing Baron Zemo in Thunderbolts just felt right. So,
absolutely, yeah.
What they were going to do next, it was definitely the top of my pile. The moment I picked it up today, it was like the first thing I wanted to read when I got home, and it didn't disappoint. The new team dynamic is really great. A lot of questions that anyone who wanted to read this book had as far as how the team is going to keep itself together has been answered here. And I thought it was very satisfactory that way.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, and having, like, Fixer and Mach, whatever number he's up to now.
I think he's Mach 5 now.
Yeah, I think it is Mach 5. Yeah, it sounds too much like Speed Racer's car. But, yeah, Mach 5 and Songbird and Moonstone all in the comic is really cool. I mean, you know, like you were alluding to, you know, the first, I guess I would probably say like maybe 2 years of Thunderbolts, you know, were some of my favorite comics ever, especially at the time. Like, they just really, like, captured my interest and blew my mind at the time. So, you know, to see so many of the, you know, because, like, in the past 3 years, you know, Moonstone's been in it and Songbird a little bit, you know, and there's been definitely, you know, appearances with those characters, but to have all of them as what looks like it's going to be like a regular part of the book is cool. And then also new elements as well. So it's cool.
Yeah, and the thing is, a lot of those characters went through a lot together. So, I mean, if you take into account, like, Songbird and Moonstone are probably the only cast members who were in the book for the entire time that they featured a team, you know.
Right.
And the characters have evolved and grown throughout the series, and then they're kind of like, and it's funny that they got reduced to what they are now because Moonstone, I thought, throughout the whole series had grown to a different character, and then she kind of reverted back to what she used to be.
Yeah.
And then Songbird kind of stuck to it, kind of just kept growing as a character. I thought it was really. I thought there was like a little in joke there about Songbird and Moonstone that I thought was a great reminder of that history they've had.
Oh yeah, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely pick this book up. The writing's by Jeff Parker, and of course it's illustrated by Kev Walker, who is fantastic. This probably
yeah,
the best work.
Great. Yeah, I like keeping Ghost in the comic too, because Ghost has become cool.
Ghost really became a favorite of mine since it was Andy Diggle's run, right? And then
Diggle stuff for sure.
Actually, when Joe Casey reintroduced him in The Inevitable, I thought that he was a great character there. And then I just like the fact that everyone picked up on that and they made something out of this character.
But I do think it's weird. I mean, I think it's cool, like the role Luke Cage is playing in it. But it's also like, I mean, at least so far, I know things are probably still going to shake out in terms of, like, lineups, but, like, pretty much everyone that's in New Avengers is in, like, some other comic right now.
Yeah.
And it seems like New Avengers is kind of, like, the, like, part-time team for, like, you know, these other characters to kind of hang out in, which is cool. I mean, you know, I like they're keeping, you know, kind of the same, like, framework of the dynamic that has been so cool in New Avengers mm-hmm. the last few years. But I'm just also kind of wondering if that's going to really, like, sort of maintain that way, or, you know, what kind of direction it's going to go in.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the characters actually have been jumping books, you know, like Spider-Man and Wolverine are in both the Avengers books. Now Luke Cage is in Thunderbolts and in New Avengers. And who knows what else they're going to be planning, because a lot of the characters have been... I guess there's a lot of time that you can account for between certain books, you know, but... I just thought it was interesting that Luke Cage would be in that kind of position now. Like, I mean, they're even doing a Shadowland tie-in with him, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah,
well,
definitely.
I think it's with Thunderbolts, though, so...
Yeah.
At least he's in the same coast. I mean, look at Wolverine. He's jumping between coasts right now.
Yeah, I mean, that Wolverine, I mean, you know, I mean, it's been like that for years. You can never really try to think too much about how Wolverine...
So You just gotta wonder sometimes. So does he teleport? Does he have a good mileage plan?
Yeah, he's just a busy guy.
Yeah. Speaking of Wolverine, though, and his other teams, Avengers number 2, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was another cool issue, and you know, and it's cool to see you know, Bendis working with the more, I guess, sort of sci-fi, bigger scope type aspects.
Yeah, I find that interesting. Like he's doing a very sci-fi story here, and then in New Avengers he's going for a more mystical approach, which is kind
yeah,
of, it's kind of not usually his thing. So I applaud him for trying different things.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I mean, like you know, I sort of in Mighty Avengers we kind of saw a hint of him doing you know the big scale Avenger stuff. This I think even seems a little different from that, and it's really cool. Obviously, the art is great too.
Yeah, I you can tell that he's kind of been aching to do it because I mean he's been doing a lot of the more covert stuff. Like even
yeah, the
Avengers
had
a lot of
street level stuff. Yeah,
I mean they didn't really have any big like you know, big Avengers epic level threats in New Avengers. Like they had the Collective, which is the closest thing they had to like a gigantic you know
yeah
super villain, but. This is the first time that he's actually gone and done it where it's just like a straight up superhero story where it's not part of some kind of event or anything like that. So that was it was really cool. I liked the glimpses into the there's a bit there where they kind of glimpse of alternate futures, which was cool.
Yeah, it had like 2099 and like the Spider Girl. I guess that's the MC2.
Yeah. Then you got Cable and Strife in there.
Yeah, and Earth-X, right?
Yeah, I saw Earth-X. Some Earth-X.
And the Maestro, and yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And then, of course, this is the part where we stop spoiling. Of course, that whole bit had to be ruined by a certain character making a return, which I thought my only problem with the issue, really, when a certain character shows up there and he kind of disrupts the whole flow of what's going on, and I feel like that character could have been used at a later time.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's more to it.
There's more to it. I mean, it's Bendis we're talking about here.
Yeah.
He's a guy who has long-term plans.
Exactly,
I just,
yeah.
I just thought that the timing of that was off because it felt so abrupt. And, you know, that character makes an appearance and then kind of goes away in a couple pages. And
it did, but, you know, actually that's kind of similar to how Kang showed up in the first issue. I mean, that was kind of abrupt, too. So
that is true. But, yeah and I was thinking about that because Kang is like the A plot of the story.
Right.
And this is like more of a B or a C plot as far as this particular storyline is going so far.
I'm sure it'll tie together like an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm in a while.
Yeah.
It'll come together at the end.
Yeah. I love the personality in JRJR's art, though. I mean, I love there's a scene where a couple characters are building something, and you see Thor in the background, like he's holding up like a piece of machinery, and he's eating a pizza. I thought that was quite brilliant.
Yeah, that's pretty great. I didn't notice that, but
it's a good look. It feels so random. Like everyone's eating pizza except for the two guys that are working. And that double page spread at the end was pretty awesome too. I can kind of figure out who some of those people are, but there's still a couple that I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, it's definitely something. It's intriguing. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks really cool, and it's a redesign for a somewhat classic character, because I think that's a completely new look for this guy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's recognizable. I mean, obviously you can tell who he's supposed to be, but...
He's still very recognizable, but he looks very different.
Yeah, it's obviously an alternate reality, or...
Yeah.
I also read that 10-page preview of the JMS Superman.
Oh,
I don't know. Did you read that?
I read that.
I read the whole book. Yeah, I only read that segment.
I bet you got the app, the DC app that came out.
Yeah, it was on the DC app on the iPhone. I don't have an iPad, but I read on the iPhone.
Yeah, I have the iPhone too. I mean, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm not big on this whole Superman walking the earth concept. I don't know. I mean, I read that preview, and then it felt so heavy-handed to me. I mean,
you know, I definitely know what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
And I do think, you know, there is, I can't understand why you think that we have, but I don't know. I mean, it is something different, I guess. And, you know, I mean, it does seem like, you know, I mean, obviously the storyline response of it is, you know, Superman being on New Krypton for so long, but it seems like, you know, Superman has been kind of, you know, either on New Krypton or he was away during 52. You know, I mean, it seems like, you know, I mean, maybe it is kind of time to do something like a little bit more, you know, lower scale of Superman. I don't know. I mean, it's intriguing.
I mean, I'll be honest, it is intriguing. But the thing is, the fact that Superman is not appearing in any other books, and you know, the fact that the character is basically only appearing in this particular book and not in any of the other books.
Yeah, but as far as I know, that's not. I mean, I know that was kind of the perception, but as far as, I mean, at least according to the, you know, official quotes from DC and JMS, that's not quite true. I mean, I do think just not as much, you know what I mean? I do think he'll probably show up in different places.
All right, well, that could be. I mean, I can live with that. I mean, we've had about a year where Superman was not in his own book for quite some time, and now he's back. He's doing this instead, and it's kind of tough to be a Superman fan, because I mean, I was really into Superman for a little bit, like especially when Jeff Johns was doing his action.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff was cool.
That was a lot of fun, and then
it felt kind of like it got kind of cut short too.
Yes, it did. Yes, and then the new Krypton stuff, like it started out really fun. You know, it was a lot of fun. But then it kind of went on a little too long, and now they're kind of finished. They finished up that whole storyline. And
it also kind of seemed to me, I mean, I don't know, not to spoil the ending, I guess, although I guess it's been for a while now, but, you know, it seemed kind of that it was like, you know, they went through all that effort of introducing new Krypton and everything and having them spend that time there, and then at the end of the story, it's like, well, what was the point of all, you know what I mean? It was like,
Now
it's all, you know, gone completely, so...
It was a waste. I mean, they could have kept them going, and they could. I mean, the War of Superman thing could have turned into something better, you know, I thought. But, you know... they did what they did, and it's all done. We have Superman back, but not quite.
Yeah, no, I mean, it seems in a way that, like, you know, and now it's going to be even longer. Like, it's been a long time since we've had, or we haven't had that much lately, just, like, Superman in Metropolis, like, stories, other than, you know, like, the Jeff Johns thing, which, you know, we both agreed felt a little cut short.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's a little disappointing, too, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, Superman has been out of the mix for a while, and now he's going to be doing whatever this is. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think it's intriguing.
I could probably check it out eventually if I hear enough good things about it. I mean, I'll be honest with you, man. I was really hoping to see Paul Cornell write some Superman after I found out he was taking over Action.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
but, you know, I could get down with his Lex Luthor, but, you know, I would like to see him do Superman. I think he could do some fun stuff with him.
I think he really could. I'm sure, he's exclusive now, so hopefully we'll get a shot at some point, probably sooner than later, but who knows.
That's also true. Speaking of which, mentioned exclusives, we will jump into the main topic I wanted to get into today. Since you are a official staff writer for Newsarama,
yes,
I wanted to talk a bit about internet journalism, and you have been doing a lot of actual journalism work, I would think, because you've written for various websites, and I think you've written for newspapers too, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, been, you know, 80-90% of my background in journalism is writing for newspapers, you know, many local papers doing, like, you know, arts and entertainment coverage. And, you know, I went to journalism school, you know, that was my major in college, and that was always what I wanted to do. I mean, so, you know, I mean, you know, not trying to, you know, act like rag or anything, but, you know, I do think that, you know, I don't just see it as internet journalism. I see it as kind of, you know, it's all sort of the same roles, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell, because I see a lot of, here's the thing, I see a lot of websites who put out active calls for people to sign up and be a part of their staff, either as a columnist or whatever, and I kind of, you know, and I see a lot of the quality of the journalism online, and it's very, and I find it lacking in so many ways, because there's a lot of people who are basically just turning their column or their website or their blog into, like, a, you know,
Soapbox,
exactly. Yeah. And there is no real reporting going on. I mean, as much as I'm not a big fan of this site, I mean, Bleeding Cool, for example, there are times where he actually shows where he can actually do actual reporting.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rich Johnson's awesome. I mean, you know, so, I mean, obviously sometimes he can be sensationalist, but that's just kind of him. But in terms of stuff that he comes up with, I mean, you know, he'll dig up stuff that no one else does. I think
yes, I agree with you. I mean, there are times where the sensational stuff. I understand he doesn't purport to be a journalist.
No, that's just kind of him too. I think that's just sort of his personality.
Yeah. But whenever he does stuff like, you know, like the Josh Hoops thing, for example, or the Dreamwave stuff.
The Pat Lee stuff, yeah.
Yes. I thought that was fantastic. I thought he was actually doing the industry a service when he was
absolutely,
that.
Yeah.
But then for every one of those, he would do, you know, this other stuff, which really annoys me. So, okay, you mentioned you actually went to school for journalism. How did you actually get started as far as getting yourself in there, as far, you know, with you mentioned local papers?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was just kind of like, you know, I mean, sort of like the typical route. You know, I was just, you know, doing as much as I could, you know, I mean, while in college to, like, try to, like, freelance or just put myself out there and meet people at local papers and just try to intern. And, you know, then I decided kind of ended up, you know, one of the papers I interned at had a job opening right when I graduated, and I got really lucky. I think it just kind of snowballed from there, getting more and more experience. But, and the funny thing you mentioned is that, you know, we talked about, like, websites putting out sort of, like, open calls or whatever to people to contribute. Was that's actually how I started working with Newsarama. They were looking for someone to cover the 2006 Wizard World LA, a convention that you probably were at.
I think I that's actually the first I've heard of you, because I remember you. I think you had you and your infamous partner Ben had some kind of live journal thing where you guys were posting some rather creepy pictures from the con.
Possibly. You know what? We've done that so many times, and we've been to so many cons together. I'm not even sure if that was the one, but I do know that the Wizard World 2006 was the first one I, like, you know, reported at. Mm-hmm. When I'm, you know, basically doing just the panel coverage, just sort of, you know, kind of running down what happened. And, you know, I mean, I just saw that they were looking for someone. I kind of emailed them, and I was like, hey, I actually have journalism training, you know, because I know a lot of people, you know, who are writing for these websites, and it's nothing against it, because you have to start somewhere, and you have to gain experience somehow, are people who just, you know, want to write and happen to like comic books a lot. But, you know, I was trying to use the hook as being, like, you know, actually
you're actually legitimate trained.
Experience, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, then I've, you know, sort of been working for them since.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen you since then. I mean, I think the first time I actually seen you at a con working was probably either at San Diego, I think, or was it Wizard World Philly the year after that?
Yeah, that was 2007. I went for that one. Yeah.
I remember, like, wow, they actually sent you here. I'm like, you're doing real journalism work here, because they're sending you on assignment.
That was pretty crazy. I mean, that was the first experience I had like that in my life. It was pretty cool. Like, you know, I mean, it was, you know, I felt very lucky and flattered to be able to do it. And yeah, I mean, and then that was a cool con too. That was
was probably one of the last years for that con where I was actually good, at least from what I've heard from other people.
I was gonna say, yeah, it seems it's like, you know, there wasn't any enthusiasm about it this year. It doesn't seem like.
Yeah, the whole convention thing, particularly on Wizards End, has been down, even though there's a lot of people who are still, you know, trying to say otherwise. But they've shifted their focus into more of the autographs and the celebrity appearances, and that's why those cons have kind of fell out of favor with most of the professionals, and I guess some fans too, as we can see on the internet.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't even think that, like, you know, a lot of them even have, like, real sort of, like, official presence and participation from big publishers, you know, anymore, which is crazy compared to how it used to be, because, I mean, they used to be, you know...
They used to be number two, you know, I mean...
Yeah.
Now that, like, it used to be, you can see Marvel and DC there, now you only see, the biggest booth you could probably see is Avatar's booth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, we touched base on how you got into Newsarama. Yeah. What other? You also worked on other blogs, though, other websites. Like, I know you did a lot of music journalist stuff. I find that very interesting because, you know, the music industry is very, very fun thing to cover.
It is, and you know that's actually, I guess sort of like my two greatest, you know, interests and passions and hobbies or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've always been music and comic books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's not a lot of jobs or opportunities to cover music, especially now, you know, with the way that, you know, journalism is and, you know, outlets going away all the time. But there's definitely more than there are for comics, you know, especially ones that actually pay. So, you know, sort of by that nature, I've done, you know, a lot more coverage of music. And, you know, and I'm still doing it, too, you know, in whatever free time I have from not doing the comic book stuff because... Yeah, it is really cool, and obviously, like, you know, I'm just, like, being able to go to a convention and cover that and have that be, like, part of your work, technically. You know, being able to, like, go to a concert and write about that and have that be considered work, I mean, you know, that's something I'll never not think is really cool, you know?
Yeah, that's like, a dream job right there. You can go and see your favorite band play.
Even if it's a band you don't really like very much, you know what I mean? That could still be fun, too.
And you discover, you know, new acts that you probably like, or in some cases you might get reinforced. You know, your dislike gets reinforced by being.
Yeah, you know, it's also I always like, you know, working, especially, you know, since I have worked a lot for local papers. You know, writing about local music because, you know, it's cool to, you know, obviously, you know, a million people can write about, like, you know, whatever giant band, you know, the Killers or Coldplay or Muse, you know. But to be able to write about, you know, like, be, like, one of the first ever people to write about a band that, you know, maybe someday could become big or more likely not, but possibly, you know, to be able to have that kind of discovery and do something a little different, I think it's always...
You can be one of the guys who said, yeah, I remember when.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you never know. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know, I really haven't, like, even though I've done that a lot, I haven't really interviewed that many, like, big names in music just because, you know, for a lot of them, I'm like, you know, what are they going to say to me if they haven't said to a billion other people that's interviewed them?
Yeah, and if you reach a band that's like starting out or something, you can it's really they're doing it for because that's what they want to do right now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's refreshing too.
Yeah, and you get them basically in their purest form as far as, you know, motivations and, you know, their writing and their music and all that.
Right, definitely, and they're also very appreciative of the coverage they get too, rather than just, you know, having it be like an obligation of their record label or whatever.
Yeah. And then, of course, they'll remember you for that. And also, you were running a blog for a bit about TV, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing that, you know, I can say that, you know, I mean, I've done blogs on TV just for fun on my own, but I've also, you know, done it as part of, you know, jobs before. That's another thing I've been, I mean, that's, like, one of the ultimate things I've been lucky to do. I mean, to be able to, like, you know, watch TV shows and write about them and get paid for that. And, you know, I did that for a little bit at a couple papers I worked for. That was never, like, my primary, like, full-time focus, but it was something I was able to do, and that's obviously a lot of fun, too. And,
yeah, because you're getting... I mean, music's, of course, an entertainment medium, so, you know, they figured you could probably stretch over... You could probably stretch a bit and do some TV for a change. And
yeah, I think it just came from me being watching a lot of TV too and talking about it with people.
Yeah, it helps to know people, you know, and it helps that people know you and what you're into.
Yeah,
it gets you in the right position to get gigs like that, which is fantastic.
I mean, especially, you know, like about 5 years ago, I mean, there were so many, like, really great TV shows on. You know, I mean, there's still, I mean, you know, a lot of good ones, but just, you know, like, back when obviously Lost was, you know, going full force, and Battlestar Galactica was still on, and I was really into Veronica Mars, and some other shows like that, you know. I mean, it was just, I was watching a ton of TV, and then somehow I was able to write about it for a little bit, too.
So, while we're still on TV, This year, what shows have you heard of that you think is going to be worth checking out? Because honestly, right now, after Lost and BSG ended, I really don't have anything on my plate aside from just a couple of comedies and Chuck.
Oh, as far as new ones coming out, I haven't, because I'm not paying quite as much attention as I used to, because I'm not really sure exactly about everything that's coming up, but I do know there's a new sitcom with Will Arnett from Arrested Development coming up, and it sounds really good. I think it's actually one of the, I do believe it has involvement from, the creative, team of Arrested Development, too, so... So that's definitely something I'm looking forward to. But other than that, yeah, I mean, there's not too much that I'm specifically looking forward to that's new at this point. But, this past year, I thought Community was really good. I mean, I love that show a lot. And Parks and Recreation got really good, too. And do you watch Party Down? That show's really good.
I have not seen that. I will look that up. I mean, out of all the shows, I only watch Community from what you mentioned. I never got into Parks and Rec, but I'll probably have to rewatch that because I wasn't really into the first season.
The first season was kind of weak, and I think I thought so, and I think pretty much everyone thought so, but, in a way, I haven't seen, in a while. The second season just really hit its stride, and it became probably one of, the best shows on that lineup, which is a solid lineup on Thursday, so yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a good lineup. It's just like...
But Community was great, yeah. I mean, Community, I was that was a show that I was excited about already, but then, it lived up to my expectations, so...
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Community, I'm pretty excited because the whole cast will be coming to San Diego for Comic-Con this year.
Oh, are they? Oh, that's perfect, yeah. That show does seem to have, a big, crossover, nerd-type audience. I'm not quite sure why, other than maybe the fact that Dan Harmon, the creator, has done so much stuff on the internet. Because he's one of the co-founders of the website channel101.com. So, yeah, but, yeah, I mean...
They did a hilarious episode, which probably would have appealed to the geek, community when they did that Modern Warfare episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the paintball one.
Yes.
That episode was great. I mean, it looked, it just looked so different, and it was, Yeah, that was really funny. I think it was directed by this Justin Lin, who directed one of the he directs actual movies. He directed
I think it was very familiar to me for some reason.
Yeah, he directed one of the Fast and the Furious movies.
you might be right there. I think that sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
So we'll jump back into comics. Okay, you started writing for Newsarama. Have you written for any other sites though, or just for them?
In terms of comic books, yeah, I mean, pretty much just them. I guess out of loyalty, I guess, because... And also, I don't know what kind of the other ones really have the same type of, opportunities. No, I don't know. But, just pretty much out of loyalty, and, it's worked out well, and, everyone I've worked with over there has been really cool, so...
Yeah, I remember going to a con, I think it was the San Diego con where I saw you actually working, we were sitting right by each other and I saw you working, and I thought it was a very fascinating process that you had to log into the Wi-Fi connection and then relay your information to someone who was actually running the site at the time.
Yeah.
Getting all the news updates that way.
It was pretty crazy. We don't do it that way anymore.
Oh, really? Okay. So
we use Cover It Live, which is a website used by a lot of people for live blogging. Where as soon as it's pretty much as soon as you hit enter, it shows up on the website. So it's in its own little window, and it's much more cuts out the middleman that way.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
But yeah, I remember actually the first convention I covered. Something devastating happened to my laptop, and it actually kind of died in the middle of it, and I had to take notes by hand on a legal pad, and then call Matt Brady, who was working for the site at the time, and read him my notes. And, after the panel, it sounds absurd now, and
oh yeah,
that's probably how I made a good impression on them, so I wasn't just like, screw it, like, I actually like tried to, like,
make the best of my that takes dedication. See, there you go. You're being a real journalist. I mean, you're relating the news some way, somehow, regardless of what happened to your own personal equipment for it. I find that very admirable.
Yeah, there's also this time when at San Diego, when for some reason my Wi-Fi wasn't working, or so I couldn't get onto my computer and send anything, but I was at like a Todd McFarlane panel, and it was when Robert Kirkman kind of ambushed him there, which I don't know.
I remember that. I don't know
to this day if that was staged or what, or, you know, and Todd, you know, supposedly didn't recognize him, and, and like, a, you know, he just thought he was a fan. Because, I mean, if you see Robert Kirkman, I mean,
oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a good thing. That's part of his appeal. I mean, you know, he's kind of like an everyman in comedy, you know, because he obviously is just a big fan, just like everybody else. And, yeah, and then they kind of have like a, you know, a thing about a back and forth about why Todd is a new comic anymore. I guess the end result of it is that Haunt comic. But, yeah, that my Wi-Fi wasn't working then, and I thought it was, you know, significant, so I actually typed out, like, you know, a report, a short one, like, on my phone. It was before iPhones were out, so I had to write, like, you know, like, it took me, like, 15 minutes to, like, write something on my phone just using, like the texting thing, so.
Wow.
That was another, yeah. So, I mean, it seems kind of silly, because it's just, like, you know, I mean, comic books, but, you know. And then, actually, you know, just last night, and you kind of facilitated in this, was kind of another funny situation, because I saw your tweet last night that the DC Comics app was on iTunes.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, that wasn't supposed to be, you know, unveiled until the morning. Uh-huh. And I thought that was, I was surprised to see that. And so then, you know, me and the editor of the site, like, stayed up till 1 a.m. Pacific time, so 4 a.m. his time, to, like, get something up. That, you know, like a story up about how it was up and available and that kind of thing. So,
wow.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess if you really like comic books and comic books news a lot, I guess, you know, I still don't think there's that many people really, you know, it's a very, like, small intersection of the population, I think, of people who are into it.
The thing is, though, it is a legitimate entertainment industry. It's not as big as the other ones, but it's still, you know, it's still a business, and it's still... It still deserves, you know, to be covered properly.
I still think it's very new in people covering it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, people have been writing about music or whatever for decades. You know, with comic books, there's still... I mean, there is definitely still a long ways to go in terms of, you know, the proper, you know, coverage given to it. But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, I think it's just like how comic books, the industry has, you know, changed a lot over, you know, the last... 10 years, I think, you know, and as that happens, hopefully, whatever comic book journalism is will change correspondingly.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, it all evolves, you know. I mean, I remember when, I remember how the older Newsarama articles read and how the current ones read. I mean, between you and Vanita Rogers, for example, you guys really put a lot of work, a lot of research into what you're doing. And you're treating the industry, and you're covering it. You're being real journalists, and you're treating this as a, you know, serious news. And I find that, you know, I like that, because, you know, you're treating the industry with the proper respect it deserves. And then there are some people that I see, like, I mean, I don't even know how to relate, you know, like, say, reviewers to this or critics, because, you know, anyone can basically be a critic by just starting up a blog or something like that, and I don't like how the way some of those people who purport to be reviewers talk about, you know, books, and without being trained to either review a book or to even make a book, which I think is an issue I've always
seen. I mean, I guess it's just kind of sort of an inevitable result of, you know, the internet giving everyone who wants it a forum. But, you know, I mean, you know, it's good for them. It's usually pretty obvious to, you know, to figure out who knows what they're talking about and who doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
Easy to ignore the people who don't. But, you know, I kind of wish there were more, you know, sort of established comic book reviewers out there. You know, I used to love that site. What was it called? The Fourth Rail?
The Fourth Rail, yes. Randy Lander and Don McPherson. They were fantastic. And I wish there was more of those guys. You know,
it was just cool. I mean, you know, I didn't always agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool that it was there. You know what I mean? It was,
yeah,
you know, it covered a lot of stuff. It was usually a pretty, it was a fairly good diverse amount of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just cool to have them out there. And,
yeah,
and you know, I don't know if either of them are even writing it.
I think one of them is still doing stuff. But the thing is, what I liked about them is that they're very articulate. They seem to know the process of that's involving the creation of a book when they talk, because there's a certain level of respect in what they're writing, you know, for the people that do the work, and they could be, I mean, whether it's a positive or negative review, they're at least respectful of the people who do them, and some of the people who do reviews these days are just basically, you know, this sucks or meh or whatever, you know. And
I feel like an axe to grind, and that this is their way of doing.
Exactly. That's all. I mean, there's still I still see people who complain about who cannot review a Spider-Man comic without bringing up the One More Day thing, for example, which really. It's been years. You know, it's been 2 years since this whole thing happened.
2.5
Yeah, and people are still not over it. And
I just can't imagine there's anyone out there who doesn't, you know, like Spider-Man comics 10 times more now than they used to. I mean, they've been so good.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, I was pretty much done with Spider-Man. Now I'm reading. I'm excited for the new issue. I mean, there was a week. There was like 3 Spider-Man issues that came out, and I'm like, I bought them all because it's a fun book. And it's just, you know, I don't know, it's just not fair to the industry, and I think they're kind of bringing everyone else down, and as far as you know, legitimacy of the industry and the people who cover and you know, review, or you know, for this particular industry, and that's really my big axe to grind with regards to, you know, internet journalism, because anyone can be that. They can purport to be press now because they have a blog, you know. It's kind of sad, really.
Yeah, I always thought, you know, I mean, like, you know, I mean, not that, you know, what I do is, like, the most, like, serious, like, significant, important stuff ever, but, you know, it's always funny when I see, like, the line of people picking up their press badge at San Diego, because they approve a lot of people, which is good. I mean, it's good to, you know, not, you know, be snooty about it, not turn people away, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, you know, I mean, you know, you do have to wonder, you know, sort of some of the credentials of the people who can call themselves press at this point,
yeah.
but... That's also, I guess, just part of the, you know, internet. That's kind of sort of the democratization of this, and I think there's, I guess, good things and bad things about it.
Yeah, I mean, look what I'm doing. I mean, for some people, this is considered some form of press at this point, podcasting. And to a certain degree, there are some podcasts who fulfill that role really well, and they report on stuff that's going on in the industry, and there's some. Which are basically just opinion forms, and yet somehow they're able to go in there and claim a press badge.
Yeah.
Kind of wrong.
Which is kind of weird, but also, I mean, you know, like, I mean, opinions have always been part of journalism as well. I mean, you know, it's always been, and that is a tradition that...
That is true, also, yeah.
I mean, you know, newspapers have always had editorial pages, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, television shows have always had commentators.
Yeah,
but it does seem like maybe, like, the proportions of commentary versus reporting has, you know, sort of flipped, I guess.
Yeah, in comics especially, there are more people with opinions than people, like, telling the news. I mean, whenever, like, a news story breaks out, like, one moment you're breaking out an exclusive news about, you know, a new DC exclusive creator, and then there's, like, for every one report like yours, there's, like, 50 who are commenting on it in their own websites. And it's gotten to that point where it's kind of hard to tell who's really reporting or who's an actual, you know, comics journalist, really. So that's always been my issue, because I mean, it's gotten to that point where a lot of these people are gaining notice because, you know, there's always like that rather vocal minority in fandom where they don't like anything that's going on and they will side with the person who's complaining.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're legitimate. And that's really, I don't know. I don't think it'll serve the industry well.
No, I don't. I know what you're saying, but I do think usually, I mean, you can see through those people usually pretty quickly. I mean, I guess there are some exceptions, but
yeah.
And you know, I mean, there will always, you know, exist a need, because part of the role of the media is to, you know, have commentary and have analysis of certain things that are happening, put things into context. And I think, you know, there'll always be the need for that. I think maybe, you know, part of the evolution of comic book journalism is kind of that finding its proper voice and sort of the right people kind of stepping up to do that.
So, let's kind of go back more to your experiences. All the work you've done for Newsarama, what was your favorite? What's your favorite thing you've written?
I was actually, just recently, like right before I started, working full time for them, I was working on a couple stories that were kind of different than, I guess, stuff you would see on a lot of of comic book websites, because the whole entire point of them was to write stories that that you would see on, like, in a newspaper or in any site. It wasn't necessarily written for comic book fans, but they were just about comic book issues. And one of them I wrote was about, the use of comic books on the iPad and the potential effect that could have on comic book stores and piracy and that kind of thing. And the other one was about Blue Water Productions. Sometimes, the attention they've been able to get, the criticism they've had, and, both of those are really cool to do, because they weren't, by nature, and I understand this necessity, and people do want to read these things online, and is the kind of the bread and butter of these sites, a lot of it is just related to one specific thing at a time, project coming out, one story, one book, one creator, which I totally understand. That's what people want to read, and that, is not going to change, and that's, that's what people look for the sites for. But, these were stories that were about, trends. They weren't about one particular thing, really. I mean, they were about, and then I interviewed, multiple people on opposing sides for all those stories. And, I put in a lot of research, and those are the kind of stories I hope to continue doing a lot more of at Newsarama, especially now that I'm full-time, because, I think that there are a lot of these stories out there that probably, I think people want to cover them, but, they may not have the resources or the wherewithal to do it, and that's the kind of thing that I hope to do more of. Especially, like, the Blue Water thing was cool because, there are so many people out there who are, ragging on them and, criticizing them, and that may be valid, but I also wanted to talk to, them, the people who do the comics. I talked to their publisher and their /president/editor-in-chief. I think he does everything there pretty much. And, he was cool to talk to. I mean, no matter what you might think about his comics, and I know a lot of people don't like them, he seemed very sincere in what he wanted to accomplish. He really does seem like he wants to attract different people to comics. He was very honest about the criticism he's gotten. He wasn't trying to downplay it at all. He knows exactly what people are saying about his company, and he responded to it, and he was honest in saying that it bugged him. He wasn't trying to act like he was, too cool or whatever, or like, oh, whatever, those people are idiots. He was like, yeah, it bugs me when people, say this.
Because he puts a lot of work into it.
It was cool, and it really does make you think. It's easy to look at one of those comics and be like, oh, whatever, I would never read that. But, you think about it, there's people who are, dedicating their lives to putting that stuff out.
Exactly, that which has always been my point as far as, criticism, like I mentioned earlier. You have to have a certain respect for the medium and the work that's put into it. You may not like the subject matter, you may not like what it's about, but you have to respect the fact that these people will probably work their asses off to put this together,
Absolutely, yeah. And, and also, there's always two sides of everything, and, there's always, I bet, there's probably an audience, I'm sure there is an audience out there for those comics.
Yeah, those books, they sold, it's not as big as, a DC or Marvel event book, but, it sold a decent amount of money for an indie book.
And the idea is that he's targeting people who don't normally read comics, and the people who normally read comics are the ones that are criticizing him, so yeah. It's kind of like,
Yeah, and the thing is, how it's kind of insular, the fan community, unfortunately, it's kind of insular sometimes, and they just try to keep to themselves, and they're kind of, they're kind of against all these new things, Speaking of new things, though, and you've been covering the industry for like almost 5 years now. What is the biggest change that what was the biggest change in the industry you thought that you got to witness, as far as it could be a format or like a way the way people publish or just anything in general?
Okay, well, that's a good question. And I'm going to go for the obvious answer and say that because, just off the top of my head, obviously, it's still unfolding, rapidly for our eyes, but obviously digital, distribution is going to be the biggest thing to change comics. And obviously, there's still a long ways to go. But, you know, I'm very excited to see what happens and see how everything shakes out.
There was a lot. I mean, today was a very pretty momentous day as far as
digital
analysis.
It really was. It really is. And, you know, and I'm, like, totally torn on it. I'm not even torn. I mean, I just love comics. I mean, I love... I want to read comics on my phone, or if I get an iPad, I want to read on there. But I still want to go to the store and buy them. I still want to...
I mean...
You know, I want to do it all. I mean, I still want to get straight paperback. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not either or thing. You know, it's like, you know, maybe I'll get one thing this way and one thing that way, you know? I want it all to be kind of out there, you know? Let's sort of, like, the marketplace, I guess, decide how things fall.
I mean, the way I see it, if you want to buy single comics, pick up the single comics of the titles you love, and then buy the digital copies of the ones you're interested in, and then buy trades later on or something. I mean, that's at least my way of thinking with regards to that. Now, today is a big game changer of a day, because not only did the DC put out an app last night, they put out like an issue of a book that came out today. And if you think about it, they put out that issue digitally before it even came out in stores, because the stores weren't open yet when that book came out. There was a Justice League Generation Lost.
Yeah.
I thought it's inspired some really interesting conversation today, I thought, particularly with regards to the price point.
I mean, DC kind of raised the stakes, I guess, because, you know, I mean, Marvel announced that the Iron Man annual is going to come out on the same day in stores as on their app.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for a series to regularly come out, you know, 26 issue series the same day, I mean, that kind of kicks things up a notch. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think that's cool. And, you know, that's...
That can...
Obviously, it's obviously inevitable, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen more and more. Because mm-hmm. that's the biggest thing. I mean, you know, and at this point, I mean, I really don't think that the iPad or iPhone apps are, like, for guys like us yet. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you know, I mean, I look at it, and I think, oh, it's really cool, and I was really excited to download it. And I was like, well, I mean, I've pretty much read all these comics already, you know? Like, but I also know that, like, you know, like, my oldest sister, you know, read comics, like, when she was in college and hasn't read them in years. But then she got the free Marvel app. Because she thought it was kind of cool, and she, you know, got the free first issue of Invincible Iron Man number one and read it and thought it was cool. And then she wanted to, you know, buy the hardcover of the whole first order. So, you know, I mean, I think that's, at this point, the customer they're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're getting new customers, and maybe you're even getting, like, some people who kind of went away, and, you know, they're winning them back in. This way is, you know, another possibility for them.
Yeah, just because, I mean, you know, I mean, what's easier? I mean, tracking down a comic book store or you know, looking at your phone and getting something in a few seconds, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And I'm really hoping they come up with some kind of compromise as far as dealing with, you know, of course, the brick-and-mortar stores, because those stores, I mean, I honestly don't care where I get my books as long as I read them. But
right.
You know, it'd be nice if they, you know, they keep these businesses going, because they're, you know, they've kept the industry going for a while. And it would be nice to see some kind of compromise between the publishers and the retailers, and of course the distribution and the fans, and see what kind of what the industry would be like if we're able to actually, you know, reach the biggest audience we could possibly reach. You know?
Absolutely, it is tough. I mean, because I mean, I really am excited about digital comics, and I want, you know, the companies to really aggressively pursue doing them. But at the same time, I mean, I love comic book stores. I worked at one for 2 years. You know, I've met some of my best friends through working there. Or, you know, I this one of the most positive working experiences of my life. I mean, I just, you know, every day was there was awesome. And, like, mm-hmm. talking to customers and talking to the weirdos that came in.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you know, random, like, freaks off the street who were out of their mind. And just everything about it was great. And then, you know, I mean, I still have a lot of friends who work for comic book stores. And I love going to the comic book store every Wednesday still. And whenever I go to a new town, I always try to, if there is a store nearby, I always want to go. I mean, I really love comic book stores. So, I mean, I don't want them to go away either. So, I mean, but I don't necessarily think just because comic books are going to be released digitally that they will either.
Yeah,
right?
I agree. I don't think it's
as grim as some people are making it out to be.
I mean, if anything, it'll force the stores to evolve and maybe, I mean, make them better too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of the stores that might not be quite as savvy might go away, but they might, I mean, it's not a great time to be a small business for any type of business right now, you know? So, and then, and it's also like, you know, with music, it was a little bit trickier because, you know, when you listen to something on your iPod or if you listen to it on a CD, like, it basically sounds the same. And there is a difference in the experience of reading a digital comic and reading, like, a print product, especially when you're talking about, you know, I know you had a show about, you know, like the Wednesday Comics hardcover. I mean, you know, you can't replicate an experience like that.
Exactly.
you know, and that's why, I mean, I don't think it's going to probably ever go away completely. Yeah. I think things are going to change.
There will always be room for both, and, you know, and I think they'll keep getting better and better at what they do in both, you know, in both mediums, in print and in digital form. So it should be a very interesting time, especially the next few months, because now everything seems to be ramping up and everyone's kind of put, you know, laid out their cards for everyone, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I have a couple questions. I have some from email.
Okay.
These may or may not relate to what we just talked about.
Well, we can make them relate. We can figure out a way to...
Okay, my first question is from a gentleman named Mark Pate.
Okay. Oh, boy.
His first question is, how many times in your life have you contemplated kissing a man?
Contemplated?
Yes.
I guess, like, if it was in a non-sexual way, like a friendly way on the cheek, and I've done more than contemplated that. I've gone ahead and done that several times. But in terms of actually doing it in a romantic way, I'm, unfortunately, for Mark, I think the answer is zero.
So. Next.
But maybe in my subconsciousness, who could say? But, you know, cause you can contemplate something without being aware of it, I'm sure, so...
It's just a thought, you know.
Yeah.
How many times a day do you crave yogurt?
You know, I actually haven't been... You know, that's kind of a weird, funny question, because I haven't been eating yogurt quite as much. And that's a reference to the fact that I used to talk about a lot on Twitter. But then actually just today, because I haven't had it in a few weeks, I was like, I could really go for a yogurt right now. And then I haven't had it yet today. So now I probably definitely will.
And his last question is, what's a better karaoke song? Best of Both Worlds by Miley Cyrus or Bye 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 by NSYNC?
Ooh, well, Bye Bye Bye, you know, has to be like a group number, obviously.
Exactly, it has to be a group. You can't do that
dance moves. Gets the dance moves up there, you know. So it's kind of apples and oranges, but... I'll go Bye Bye Bye, though, yeah.
If you consider that, though, there's some choreography involved there. That could be a...
There's a lot that could go wrong.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, if he was asking me, I would probably go for Best of Both Worlds, because that's probably more manageable as far as...
It is.
You don't have to rely on anyone but yourself.
And I did sing it less than a week ago on my birthday, so...
Our next question is from your... Who was deciding between the two of you? Is it you or is it Ben who was asking?
I'm younger, so technically I would think I would probably be the sidekick, but I'm also taller... And more of a, like, a, I think I'm probably the more outgoing one. I don't think that's...
Okay, yeah, because I've seen the two of you before.
Yeah, you've interacted with us in person.
Yes.
So in some ways, I don't know, I guess you could also have some claim to the sidekick role. So I don't know. I guess we're each other's sidekicks.
Okay. And we'll go with Ben's question, which is, what is your most favorite thing about being a comic/music/TV/internet journalist? And what is your least favorite thing about being a comic/music/TV/internet journalist?
That's a pretty... I could see that question coming, because whenever we're at panels, that's like one of our... I'll let people know some of our hilarious writing gags. Like,
yeah, go ahead.
You know, when we hear, like, just, you know, when you have been to as many... I mean, you've been to a ton, too. When you've been to that many comic panels, like, there's just so many dumb questions, you know? And so many questions that you've heard so many times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're always joking, but that's, like, you know, like a cliche, like a question that, like, a little kid would ask. Like, what's your favorite part about writing X Factor and your least favorite part? So, I don't know. I guess I'll just tell that story in lieu of answering his question. But
go ahead.
I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, my favorite part is, I don't know, is being able to collect all these great stories and jokes over the years. And my least favorite part is when I hear people at panels ask things like the same questions over and over again. I'm trying to think of a really popular one.
Oh.
For a while, people were always asking Marvel, like, when they were going to go back to... This is a really super nerdy, like, specific thing. People would ask this every panel. Like, they would ask when they're going to go back to doing, like, storytelling covers instead of iconic covers.
Yeah, and don't forget the classic, when is Mary Jane and Spider-Man going back together?
Yeah, and then in DC panel, people would always ask about a spoiler. They'd always ask. But now that she's back, they're going to be asking about Cassandra Cain a lot. I'm sure we're going to hear that.
Another one I hear at Marvel panels a lot that finally we won't be hearing again is, are they ever going to do Marvel vs. Capcom 3?
Oh, yeah, of course. And then, of course, obviously, the answer is always like, I have no idea. You know,
just, yeah, I have no idea. We're not involved with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people don't realize that.
And then also, like, obviously price increases.
Oh, yeah.
Always ask about, yeah.
You remember from last year when Jeff Loeb gave that kid a dollar back after he was complaining about he paid $3.99 for the Hulk, and Jeff Loeb said, come here, here's a dollar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I don't remember that. Hilarious. I also remember one time Paul Jenkins gave someone money back for Captain Marvel to return.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. I've had some really, really fun encounters with Paul Jenkins. Paul Jenkins
is a really funny guy. He's super cool. Yeah.
There was an instance where we were a bunch of friends and I were we were drinking at Wizard of Chicago one year, and he stopped by our table, and he knew me. He knew a couple other people at the table too. So he hung out for a bit, and he orders a round of drinks for everyone. And we didn't know what drink he ordered. It turns out he ordered cement mixers. And we didn't know that, you know, that's one of those things where you take a shot. You take a shot, and then you put Baileys in. And it's a citrusy drink that you drink first, and then you put the Baileys in. But you have to put it in your mouth, and you have to kind of shake it in your mouth. And it starts to congeal, and then you basically swallow it whole.
Wow.
It's like it tasted terrible.
It's like a science project and a drink.
Yeah, it tasted terrible, and it kind of hurts your throat. So it's like, I'll never forget that, because that's apparently like a prank he likes to pull on people.
That's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, he's a really funny guy.
He really is.
One of my favorite comic writers, too, of all time, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, people like to complain about his stuff, but you got to remember he also wrote Inhumans, which is probably one of my favorite comic series of all time.
Definitely one of mine as well, and also, I mean, the original Sentry miniseries.
Yeah, that was such a great book. The whole hoax behind it was also one of my favorite, you know, marketing ploys they've ever pulled off, you know?
Yeah, me too. Same here. But yeah, no, I thought that comic was awesome. And Humans was really good too. I don't know. Yeah, I think Paul Jenkins is great. I mean, and his Spider-Man stuff I love too.
Yeah,
especially when it was Peter Parker's Spider-Man. He was doing a lot of like the 1 and 2 issue stories.
Yeah, the Return of the Goblin story he did, and then the baseball issue with Uncle Ben.
Yeah,
him and Mark Buckingham were fantastic. You know, you couldn't beat that team.
Yeah, my only real complaint with him now is he just doesn't write as much stuff.
Yeah. I have to agree. I mean, the last thing he wrote, unfortunately, was not one of my favorite things he's ever written.
The Sentry, Fallen Sun?
Yeah, that wasn't really my favorite thing that he's ever done, but it was cool to kind of see him come back and, you know, kind of revisit that character one more time before he, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the fun thing about conventions, I'm sure you've gotten yourself acquainted with a bunch of other pros, you know, or writers or artists or whatever, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, I'm best buddies with a bunch of people, but yeah, I've had many encounters with comic book professionals over the years, mostly positive.
Yeah, that's you know, one of the reasons why, you know, I think the journalism side of this industry, you know, needs to kind of step up a bit, because these people deserve, you know, that kind of respect.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. At any rate, Albert, thanks for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet? What's your website for yourself, aside from, of course, your main work site?
I don't really. I'm not kind of what do you call it? Twitter is the best. You know, it's Albert XII on Twitter, and then yeah, Newsarama.
Yeah, and. Cool. Of course, you mentioned Newsarama. You write pretty much most of the stuff there from now on, I guess, now that you're exclusively with them.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there every day, but at least, you know, I mean, ideally, you know, a couple things each day, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So, once again, this is Albert Ching, and you can find him on newsarama.com or on twitter.com/AlbertXII. And as for me, you can find me at the usual spots. You can find me at facebook.com/PatLoika. Twitter.com/PatLoika, or go to my blog at patloika.com. And thanks again for listening. Be sure to hit us up on iTunes, leave us a review, or subscribe to the show. And that's it for us this week. Thanks for listening, and you take it easy.